Volatility has been the name of the game in the grain markets, and it ramped up again today. The give and take start to the week points to more of it through the end of the week. And hogs, oh man, another strong start to what should be another strong week.
Live from a long Monday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we welcome back Scott Verlick of Coima Verlick Trading. After the news with Tyne Morgan, we'll get price action from Jack Scoville of Price Futures Group. And in the final segment, Kerry Artek of Artek Advisory will have his chart update. I'm producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right. Thank you, Big Apple. Appreciate that, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Davis is out on a little bit of vacation here this week. So Joe is sitting in for Davis at the start of the show. And did I hear you right? Mm-hmm. Is it Tyne Morgan? Mm-hmm. Tyne Morgan is coming on to do news today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it only took a $20 bill, Chip.
That's not too bad. That's not too bad. And like the recommendation of my three favorite hamburger joints and stuff like that, right?
Oh my gosh, that's what we were talking about before we came on live. Iowa Cattlemen's just had their best burger, and I'm telling you, Chip, I will judge a town based on where I ate and what I had to drink. I'm sorry, that's how it is, and I'm going to have to try out Iowa Cattlemen's list of best burgers in Iowa. That is for sure.
Yeah, yep. And these are legit. They are legit, man. I've followed up and gone to some of those burger joints and cafes and restaurants. You know, the Iowa Pork Producer also does the best tenderloin in the state.
Well, Chip, based on some of the reports that you've been telling me and I've been hearing from farmers in the field, some of them may be wrapped up with planting and may have time to check out that list a little bit earlier than they thought.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. We're going to find out from USDA coming up here in just a little, about an hour. We'll get the update to the crop progress and so on. But boy, another volatile start to the week, Tyne. Let's go ahead and get to some of the details. What do you got?
Yeah, buckle up. My goodness, what a ride on this Monday. Let's start off with wheat, Chip. Export inspections of wheat in the week ending April 29th totaled nearly 510,000 metric tons. Now, that was in line with trade expectations. The U.S. Northern Plains and Canadian Prairies, boy, Chip, are they dry? There's just not much relief in the forecast, and the threat to the U.S. and Canadian spring wheat crops should limit selling pressure on wheat for the near term. Now, when you look at July soft red winter wheat futures, those gapped higher and pushed through the psychological resistance at 750 for a second. But the new crop contract, it reversed after mid-morning trade to end near session lows. July hard red winter wheat was 15 cents lower at 688.5. July soft red wheat fell 16 and 3/4 cents at 718. Even in September, spring wheat was 4 3/4 cents lower at 763.5.
Yeah, this is the second time now that 750 has basically rejected the rally in July SRW wheat. So that's becoming a very important point that we need to watch in that market. 750 in July SRW.
Well, if you thought it was eventful in wheat, you should check out corn today. July corn futures gapped higher, rallied to within 2 cents of $7, then fell back to within a penny of Friday's high. The new contract high close in old crop corn was driven by dry conditions across much of the Brazilian corn crop. USDA's April estimate of Brazilian corn production was 109 million metric tons, but many crop watchers now see the crop below 100 million metric tons, Chip. Dry conditions in areas of the U.S. Corn Belt was provided support today. USDA this morning announced export inspections for corn of 2.14 million metric tons. That keeps U.S. corn loadings ahead of the pace needed to hit USDA's export estimate. And Chip, when we look at the prices today, July corn futures were 6.25 cents higher at 679.5. September corn, it slipped half a penny at 591.75. December corn closed at 563. That was down 0.75 cents.
Yeah, that export inspection number was absolutely outstanding, getting back on top of 2 million metric tons. But you know what it is. It's the Safrina corn crop. There are some crop watchers that are thinking that that crop is going to be closer to 90 million metric tons than the 110 million metric tons in that, or 109 million metric tons in that in the April S&D report. So it's starting to take big chunks off that Brazilian mm-hmm. corn crop now.
how that story has changed in just a matter of months. Well, chip soybean oil futures continued to provide support for bean prices, but the downside correction in soybean meal, it was pulled beans to the downside. July beans actually gapped higher and near session highs before falling back to close lower on the day and near session lows. Now, chart watchers say that it really points to more consolidation just above the $15 level this week. Export inspections of soybeans of just over 143,000 metric tons, that came in below trade expectations. July bean futures were down 10 and one quarter cents at 1524. August beans slipped 4 1/4 cents to 1467. November beans, they closed at 1344 and three quarters. That was up a nickel on the day.
Yeah, money flow, money flow, money flow. We got to be keeping a very close eye on it and the spread action in the products. All very important in that soy complex.
New crop cotton futures seem to be tied to the 85-cent level. July cotton today was 22 points lower at 87.86. December cotton firmed 14 to 85.20. Now, nearby cattle futures were pressured by last week's lower cash bids. June live cattle were 127 and a half lower at 115.30. And October cattle firmed a nickel to 122.95. August feeders were also a nickel higher at 146.80. And strong pork demand shipped. Expectations of a higher cash hog bids. That's what pulled lean hog futures higher today. June lean hogs were 292 and a half higher at 112.65. And August hogs, those gained 192 and a half to 107.42 and a half.
Perfect. Thank you, Tyne. Appreciate
Thanks,
it. We'll
Chip.
Talk to you again tomorrow.
Yeah, no
That's
problem.
Tyne Morgan, U.S. Farm Report. Let's bring in Jack Scoville from the Price Futures Group. How you doing, Jack?
Doing great. How about you?
Well, not too bad, but man, just a lot of give and take in this market to start the week, Jack. What's it tell us about the rest of the week?
Well, it looks like it's going to be a pretty wild week for one thing, and I would be wondering about the upside just a little bit. We didn't close all that well. I don't expect any real big down moves, but we could see a little bit of additional selling pressure this week and keep things more on a steady, you know, sideways type of train.
Yeah. When you look at what's going on in that corn market, and I'm thinking about the old crop stuff here, Jack, is that a money flow issue? Is that a Safrina corn crop, a Brazilian corn crop issue? What's driving that old crop corn?
Well, I think it's the Safrina corn crop
okay.
that's driving. I honestly do. I think there was some news around today. I saw it tweeted out that you know, 60% of the crop is being stressed right now. That's a lot. It's a lot of corn that could be lost, and I think that's definitely supported the new crop. And our export inspections were great, you know, over 2 million. So we're shipping corn, and one of the reasons why we are shipping so much corn right now is because the Safrina crop's in trouble.
Yeah.
And Brazil oversold last year to begin with, so they're not going to sell all that much. And I think most of the Argentine corn is probably going to go up to Brazil as well. So that leaves a whole lot of demand for the U.S. And I think our demand prospects are going to hold pretty strong, even though our prices are pretty high. And I think the market's reflecting that a little bit.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Great stuff, Jack. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, great.
All right, man. Yeah, great insight into what's going on in that old crop market right now. When we are taking bushels off of the South American crop and shipping more than 2 million ton a week, wow, that's an impressive mark. We're going to be talking cattle with Scott Barley next. Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bioproducts made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Dallaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Dallaro Complete from Bayer.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Wow, off and running here. Thanks again to Tyne for helping out with the news this week. Appreciate it. Davis is on vacation. We're just going to try to keep it between the ditches and keep this thing moving along, keep the conversation going. And with everything that has been happening in the grain markets over the past, you know, what? Geez, 10 months now, maybe not 10 months, but at least 8 months. It's been easy to kind of lose track of some of the other markets. And while the grain markets have been flying high, this cattle market has been generating all kinds of frustration out there for the cattle feeder. And I don't know anybody better to cover what's going on in the cattle market than Scott Varlick from Coima Varlick. How are you doing, Scott? It's good to talk with you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Glad to be here.
You bet, man. At some point, Scott, we're going to be having a conversation when the feed yards have got some leverage back. I just don't know exactly when that's going to be yet. Do you?
I don't either. You classified us right as just one of the other markets. As everybody else is in the ag industry is having a pretty good go at things, and we're kind of left struggling a little bit with a lot of frustration mounting, and some of the feed yards and cattle guys really struggling and having to really try to put up a fight. And yeah, you kind of mentioned it. I mean, the nail on the head is the leverage. That's seems to be the biggest issue. And you've got inflation kicking in and talking amongst the commodities, and a lot of commodities reacting to that. We're kind of left in the dust a little bit as not ready to really pop. And yeah, I think, yes, there's going to be an opportunity. Like you say, there will be a day when we can say, yeah, we're really getting some profit, but we're going through a lot of hurt to try to make that happen, I think.
Yeah, underperforming, I think, would be the way to describe what's going on in the cattle complex, not just the live cattle futures, but the feeder cattle futures as well. And one of the things that I think makes it so frustrating is you look over across the aisle at the lean hog market, and you see that market really performing well, and it's just kind of a throw your hands in the air, doggone it, why can't we get some of that love over here in the live cattle market? And when you see that box beef trade doing what it's doing, and it doesn't feel like that cash market has got much of a connection to the box beef market right now, Scott, when everybody wants it to.
Yeah, you're correct. First off, yeah, $4 difference between June hogs and June cattle, and you really start to scratch your head at, okay, how can they be that close? You know, two totally different, I guess not totally different, but we know that the beef is king, and that's what people want, and the demand is there, and the boxes show it. So it's very evident at what's going on. Boxes can be at near $300 choice, and we are struggling to get a bid to get some cattle moved, and they're at prices that do not work. Just continuing to take losses, and it's been since the Holcomb fire when we really lost our leverage and unhooked the two, and we saw boxes charge higher after that and cash go straight down. So been quite the shift in the last 10 years in how we trade cattle, and that's what we continue to fight. We've had a large increase in formula trade and a large decrease in negotiated trade. So that's obviously what we've been talking a lot about and what we continue to fight. We've got a lot of involvement with different working groups on trying to come up with solutions. I think we're going to be meeting with Chuck Grassley tomorrow, some of us. So that's going to be kind of a fun meeting there. I guess we're trying to put up the best fight we can. And it's really evident when we see the large increase in formula trade. So it's based on the small group of negotiated trade. And now we see the effects of that. When we have less people to say, we want a higher price, we see that the demand is really good and we want to ask for it. There's just so few of us anymore. It's gotten such a smaller piece of the pie that here we sit at these levels when boxes are at $300, near $300, and we're unable to kind of get a piece of that pie. So quite a bit out of a line. Formulas are getting paid to do formulas. They get on average more than what we're getting negotiated. Even in last week, some of these negotiated ranges, average of 196.60, top side of the range on some of those formulas, 251.81 in the meat for the top of their range. So somebody's formula is really making it pay for them to be in that. So okay. There is some that really make that work, and it's unfortunately been a quantity over quality type of trade. It's more the northern sector that's really struggling right now. We see a lot of the good old boys that fed cattle for fun, keeping some of these custom yards moving, and it was a good business opportunity. See a lot of those guys just kind of being done, and that money's kind of dried up, and you can pick your place to throw some cattle on feed. I'm up here in Northwest Iowa right now. There's plenty of room available.
Scott, it sounds like what you're saying is that this industry in the northern area is going through another transition. And if there's good closeouts on those formula-driven cattle, why shouldn't we shift the formula market to the northern market? Why doesn't that happen?
Well, and that's exactly what it should be. The highest priced cattle should be the ones that are up here in the north. They're the best ones that walk, and they're the last ones to basically get paid here. They're kind of getting the bottom of the barrel. So that, you know, we talk about the quality is king, and that's what the demand wants. They continue to want quality beef, and the certified Angus beef guys are talking about record numbers for them, and it doesn't trickle up here. So you've got a lot of individual farmers up here, a lot of the family farms. Those are the ones that are in jeopardy right now. They don't have the quantity of cattle to compete with that, to get as good of a formula deal as they could. When you're talking to go against plant averages, against what you get, well, there's the plant average in any of these plants up here. It's going to be significantly different than what you are in the south. It'd be a lot easier to beat the plant average at one of those plants down there versus right down the road up here. So those premiums just don't get divvied down. So the incentive has been there for quantity rather than quality.
Okay. What about differences on cost of gain between the north and the south markets or feed yards, Scott?
Gotta be so significant. Yes, we've rallied quite fast on the grains here, but maybe some of the feed needs were covered to kind of help cover this last, round of cattle here, and you kind of were able to kind of play against it a little bit. But anything you start to put on feed now really should start making a difference. It should make the northern guy more competitive. Not that I've really seen it yet. Everybody's still trying to get stuff moved along that we have. We're having a harder time getting bids and really having a tough time trying to fill the yard with feeders that really can't show quite of a, profitability yet. So guys are choosing to kind of say, well, I kind of have to sit empty for a minute here. But to me, it makes sense that there should be quite a few cattle on feed up here with the feedstuffs that's up here.
Yeah.
But we're instead seeing a little bit of liquidation and really pulling back quite a bit.
Wow. Okay. What's calf supply like out there? If you do empty out a feed yard, can you replace them pretty easily?
It's not, I mean, they're around. I've had a lot of guys calling me saying, how come I can't even get close on these feeders? Why are they too high? Why can't I not get them to work? That's kind of the question we've had. And we've typically been a market where you're buying the feeders, you're kind of betting on the come just a little bit, and you didn't really have to worry about the feed cost so much. You could go hand to mouth for the last several years and not really get hit too hard. Well, that's changed a little bit. So you have to have a sharper pencil and kind of a better game plan when you're kind of looking at things. But we are seeing plenty of cattle moving. There are some guys that were planning on some grass cattle that are saying, nope, they can't go there. I don't have any grass, that are going to start to come to the feed yards as well. So we're in that liquidation kind of area. I think the drought's going to kind of, if we do have a drought, if it continues to be dry, it's going to kind of further the, we're going to liquidate some of these numbers. And unfortunately, that's the only way that the cattle industry's been able to get any leverage back in their court is just have less numbers or you know, significantly less weight, too, is something we can talk about, too. But
Yeah, absolutely. We'll do that when we come back. You know, Scott, it one of the first things you mentioned was that Holcomb fire. It goes all the way back to that when all of a sudden the feed yards and the finishers were hustling to try to get things cleaned up and the inventories and the supplies back in balance. It's just an amazing thing that it's taken this long. You know, one other thing, Scott, when we come back, is the futures market, the live cattle futures market, providing any risk management that can actually be used? It's time for Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from pro farmers. First thing today, wider price limits took effect overnight. Argentina brought in $3 billion via grain exports last month. Strategy Grains says high rapeseed prices are here to stay due to the global deficit. Help for restaurants is taking shape. The restaurant revitalization funds are now available. Check out this morning's AgriTalk for some of the details on that. The U.S. tone on China continues to be aggressive. Secretary of State Antony Blinken declared that China has been acting more aggressively abroad. New restrictions on travel from India effective May 4 were announced by the White House, and Manchin does not support D.C. statehood or election reform bills. Give ProFarmer a try at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We are having a conversation with Scott Varlick from Coima Coima Varlick. Before we get back to that, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed today. July HRW wheat 15 cents lower at 688.5. July SRW fell 16.75 cents to 718 even. July corn futures 6.25 cents higher, 679.5. September corn slipped half a penny to 591.75. D's corn 563, down 0.75 cents. July bean futures 10.25 cents lower at 1524. Novi beans closed at 1344.75, up a nickel on the day. December cotton firmed 14 points to 85.20. June live cattle 127.5 lower at 115.30. August feeders also were a nickel higher at 146.80. And June lean hogs 292.5 higher at 112.65. All right, let's get back to this conversation with Scott Varlick. Scott, you know, before we move on to some of the other questions, I'm going to start with the question that I asked right at the end of the last segment. Is this futures market providing the risk management that it is supposed to be providing? Can it be used?
I've certainly had a little bit of problems this year. I guess you can start, you know, with the February contract. As you start the year, you're selling cattle in January for 108 when the board's at 117. Yeah. So kind of put a bullseye on, wow, this is really starting to hurt. I think a lot of that had to deal with, yes, funds were wanting to be long the cattle as well, wanted to be long the commodities. So they were really pumping a lot of money into it. We've seen some fundamental reasons why cattle should maybe go higher. You know, we're going to have less weights than a year ago. We had increased heifer slaughter, so you got some different nuggets there that the funds like to see, and pumped a lot of premium into the market, and then it never just showed up. So it is a deliverable contract, so it always can, you know, once you get into the month of delivery, it can close the gap via actual fundamentals. So I still think that's a good thing, but it's maybe gotten a little better here recently. I would say luckily there was a significant amount of cattle feeders that were unhedged. I guess I said that idea was maybe that was the advice I was feeding them anyway, but there was such a huge opportunity and we had taken so many losses that it was kind of one of those things. It's hard for us to take loss after loss after loss and then take the first little bit and lock it in when the potential was there to really move higher. Now, as I kind of mentioned that, we expect things to get better, so the funds pump a lot of money into it. Everybody gets a little bit long. The futures put a premium in there. We're in that part of the cattle cycle where we pump that premium in expecting better prices, a better future. And then when we get there, the front has to tail off because we may have a little bit too much penciled in there. So we're almost in kind of that cycle where we can be bear spread for the next several years as we start to see that. You pump in the premium into the futures, you're saying it's going to get better later. You get to the later, well, we're not quite that good yet, so you got to pull the front down. Well, it's going to get better later, then that later comes, well, not quite there yet, so then they got to pull that down a little bit. So that seems to be the tier. I don't see June that out of line right here at 115 with where the cash is at. Typically May 1, June's going to be about $7 under the cash, just rough rule of thumb numbers, and yeah, we're about 4 under it. So so it's actually a little bit in line right now, more in line than it has been, I guess I would say.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, the structure of the market, obviously what's going to change it is once the leverage changes hands and the leverage has to, it's going to take a change up in the supply out there. And we know that that calf numbers, calf numbers are going to be pointed a little lower here over the next couple of years, aren't they, Scott?
Correct. I think that's part of it. Calf numbers will be a little bit lower. And right now, with the way things are set up and the cost of gains where they're at, we're seeing over a dollar cost of gains, and some are looking like they could start to be a little bit higher when it's all said and done. When you start to narrow that gap with what you're actually getting per pound on the end, I mean, there's that risk that your cost of gain might actually be higher than what you're getting on the end. So there's going to have to be some incentive pumped into those markets for guys to want to put extra pounds on these cattle, which we've had too many pounds on for years due to the lack of being able to clean up and yes, cheap feed and guys fighting the market. But there's going to have to be some sort of incentive. Otherwise, we're going to see straight get them out of here. You know, even if they're not quite ready, they're going to want them to go. And if I see that kind of margin from a packer standpoint, I would sure think that they would say, hey, we've got this gravy train going on. This is one thing that could possibly slow that down if we can't find enough choice beef. So I'm just led to believe that at some point they're going to want to start to feed that a little bit to say, hey, we do need some weight on cattle because, you know, we're in no financial situation just to kind of continue to put that extra weight on them and try to think we're going to get better prices. So I think the deferred cattle have to kind of lead us out of here to kind of give us some hope and give us some opportunity to actually make some money on those. Otherwise, we're going to be significantly lower on weights.
Okay. Drought may have an impact on total cattle supplies over the next couple of years as well. I mean, the cow-calf country seems to be that area that the weather forecasters are focused on for potential drought. Scott, what impact would that have on our market going forward?
It's going to have an impact, I think, and it's serious when it wasn't even May yet and we were already talking about that, how dry it is and the lack of moisture in the north, and this is the spring season. We're supposed to be kind of okay for a little bit, but already have producers that are liquidating, trying to get down to numbers that they can make it through the summer on. Cow-calf pairs were, you know, fairly decent value in the wintertime, and now it seems like, having a harder time getting some bids on some of those critters. So the grass just isn't there, so you're going to see calves coming into the feed yard early, you're going to see cows going to slaughter, and this is on top of already having increased heifer slaughter over the last several years. Looks to be like we're going to be decreasing the cow herd again. I mean, the bottom line just kind of tells me that smaller beef production coming in the future.
Okay. So we've talked the heck out of the supply side of the market, and now let's really talk about some good news, because the demand is just freaking outstanding, Scott.
Yeah, it's been really amazing, and I probably haven't talked about it a lot day to day because from a cattle feeding standpoint, it just almost makes you mad. It just kind of gets you to, we know it's there. We know it's good. We keep hearing all about it, and we just haven't been able to get a piece of that pie yet. So, but it's been amazing. We're expecting that people are going to get out and travel and get out to restaurants again, and they've got a little bit of, you know, whether it's government money, got some money in their pocket that they've been saving because they haven't been going out. Demand's going to be there. It's going to stay pretty rock solid. So really not a lot of worries there. And you see restaurants opening up, and there's still huge demand for quality beef, and they want it. So I think there's still a good future. I don't see that's just going to all of a sudden just dry up on us yet. So I think that's going to still be there.
Okay, very good. Let's go rapid fire on the questions that came in from Heath on Twitter. It's at @HEAB_50. And tell us about Heath, Scott.
Yeah, Heath was, he went to Dort University here, Sioux Center, Iowa. He was one of our interns. We every semester have an intern come through and spend some time with us about 3 days a week. And it's a lot of fun. Heath was one of those interns there, so he's still pretty passionate about it. So, and I think he's heavy into the egg production side and in the grain business and some livestock as well. I think he went quite a ways west out into Montana, though. So that's a little ways from Sioux County, Iowa.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I love this first question. How many feedlots have their supply of corn purchased, and more importantly, in inventory?
Yeah, never enough. You know, I mean, there's some guys that do an excellent job at it, at seeing trends form and pressing trends. So if you were those kind of traders, yep, you did good. But there's always some that do not get that done. And it's per individual basis, I guess. So I think there's always room for guys to have some more feed coverage on. We haven't had to do it for the last 5 years, so it's challenged all of our grain marketing plans. If you had none, now it's suddenly, I better start to come up with a plan. But when you see trends form like that, it's really beneficial to some guys because they know how to press and how to, you know, the trend is your friend. So never ignore that and not try to fight those trends. Makes life a little bit easier there.
Yep. Second question was about drought. We've covered that. I love how he split this on the demand side. Do you see greater demand coming from the reopening of the restaurants or from at-home grilling in the next 3 months?
Well, in the next 3 months, I think the bigger opportunity, I think they're both going to be good, by the way, but I think a greater opportunity is to get these restaurants kind of opening up. I think there's a lot of business yet to be had there. The at-home grilling is going to be amazing, I think, once it starts to really stay continued nice weather and everybody's going to want to be out. So I really think it's going to be both of them staying excellent and into full swing. Like we've talked about before, I think everybody kind of learned how to cook at home just a little bit better. So that was a nice little benefit that we had that, hey, a little reminder that we can do this at home and do it pretty well, get some quality beef, and I can just make it right here and have it. So I think excellent room for both.
Very good. Very good. Scott, we are out of time, but we covered a lot of ground today, buddy. We always do with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chip.
You bet. That is Scott Varlick, Coima Coima Varlick Trading. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk with Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory. And by the way, just got a text from Scott. $3 choice boxes. Packers need to share the love. Boy, Scott's got that right. We'll be right back with AgriTalk here in just a moment.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Glad that you could join us on this Monday. And Monday means it is time to get a chart update from Kerry Artak, Artak Advisor. How are you, Kerry?
I'm doing great, Chip. Thanks for having me again. Appreciate it.
You bet. You bet. Go to Artak, that's A-R-T-A-C, advisory.com. At the top of that page is a link to AgriTalk. Click on that, and you can see a video of what we are about to talk about. It's just a little bit of added information in there. But Kerry, let's go ahead and kick things off with one of the most dynamic markets I've seen in a long time, and that is July corn.
Yeah, July corn, Chip. You know, last week on your show, I mentioned that had we settled above, you know, 644 half roughly, we'd enter another sort of long-term buy signal. The first was last December when we settled above 465 roughly, then anticipating 645 roughly. Now we've taken that area out and we are clearly above it. We settled above it clearly last Friday. And so I've got another buy signal of 3 to 5 months in length where I'm anticipating 834 half. And this will remain in effect so long as we continue holding above a long-term speed line that I show on that video, actually, at 644 and a quarter this week. That is our floor of support through summer, above which 834 half remains a 3 to 5 month target. On the way up, I've got a decent resistance at 737 even that could actually contain buying on a monthly basis. And if we were to close above 737 even at the end of any week, then I think we could actually reach 834 half in as little as 3 to 5 weeks, where the broader corn market can quite easily place an annual high. Now, downside, if we close the week Friday back below 644 and a quarter, I do think the next few weeks should yield a downward continuation to 568 and a quarter, which is a trend-defining support level that could actually contain selling into summer trade. And so the way I would phrase this is bullish into summer above 644 and a quarter, and I don't turn aggressively bearish into summer until or unless we close below 568 and a quarter. And then I'm anticipating that 465 even level once again within a few months of that. 465 even, I keep referring to it as our new floor of long-term support in the broader corn market. And, you know, I don't expect to see that anytime soon, especially holding above 644 and a quarter, as I say, 834 half expected by the end of summer. On to July soybeans. July soybeans, you know, well below the market, 1405 half is our midterm support that, if tested over the next few weeks, can actually contain selling through summer, and above which I'm still maintaining that long-term target at 1656 even, well above the market, which I've been talking about since last November. Now, 1405 half, is it in reach? It is if we continue trading below 1554 and a quarter. So I'm throwing kind of a nearer term resistance level at you, a ceiling of resistance at 1554 and a quarter, able to contain buying into later May. We did test it again. We tested it last week, pushed through it, never settled above it. We pushed through it an overnight trade on Monday, didn't close above it. Of course, we're at 1524 last. So 1554 and a quarter, our weekly ceiling, below which that 1405 half support, not out of the question by the end of May, where, as I say, we can bottom out through summer, and above which 1656 even remains an end of summer target. And that said, if we can close this week Friday above that 1554 and a quarter level I mentioned, then 1656 even, likely just 2 or 3 weeks away from being tested, where we can actually top out through the year itself. That's been a target now really since the November buy signal that I'd mentioned on your show months ago. Yep. Finally, June live cattle. June remains in sell mode. It is weak into summer trade below 118.40. We close around 115.30 today, June contract. So I'm you know, telling my subscribers to remain hedged longer term, which is to say into summer trade below 118.40, because the charts are telling me that 97.42 is in reach over the next 3 to 5 months to the downside. And that's a speed line that's rising ever so gradually. On the way down, healthy respect given to 109.50. And I think that's likely to be tested in the next few weeks. 109.50 could actually contain selling into June contract expiration, but I am ultimately expecting it to be violated. And if so, in the next few weeks, we should get an accelerated down move to that targeted 97.42, probably within 3 to 5 weeks, 97.42 able to contain annual selling pressures. Now, upside, if the June contract, the broader market perks up later in the week, and we happen to close the week Friday back above 118.40, that would shrug off that long-term sell signal. And with that nullification, you know, I would expect June to rally back into the 123.65 area within a few weeks. The August contract has enough time to actually continue onward and upward to 136.50 by August expiration, if and only if we can close the week back above 118.40 June contract. And that's all I've really got here today, okay. Chip.
Okay, excellent. Good work there, Kerry. I mean, this, like I said, this corn market is as dynamic a market as I've ever seen. And like you said, it's pointed to all-time highs, and it's going to be tough to slow it down at this point. All right,
it
buddy.
Is eight,
thanks,
four,
man.
849 is the all-time high August 12th, just so you know.
Oh, okay. All right.
All right.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Thanks,
Take it
bud.
Easy.
You Bye-bye bet. Now. We'll talk to you later. Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory, again. And when you go to artakadvisory.com, Kerry will also set you up with a 2-week free trial of his services there. On the morning show, I was complaining about that we were getting a whole bunch of nothing when it came to rainfall. We're getting better than nothing at this point, you know, bumping about 0.2 inches here in northeast Iowa, but we've got a long ways to go to correct the dry conditions that we've got. National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook, this is for May 9th through the 13th, has below normal temperatures in for the entire Corn Belt. You get into the far southern reaches of the Corn Belt and you start getting into the normal to above normal, but boy, I mean, we're talking about 85% of the nation's corn is going to be dealing with some below normal temperatures in that time frame. We've got above normal precipitation expected across most of the area. North Dakota, northern Minnesota, far northern Wisconsin are the exception where normal to below normal precipitation is expected. Again, that's for May 9th through the 13th. And real quick, on the 8 to 14 day, this is May 11th through the 17th, below normal temperatures expected over most of the Corn Belt with above normal precipitation. So we may have the opportunity to fix some of these dry conditions out there, but it's going to come with some cooler temperatures as well. For Tyne Morgan and for producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, thank you for listening today. Tomorrow morning, Donnell Rehagen from the National Biodiesel Board and Tyson Redpath from the Russell Group. Tomorrow afternoon, Andrew Jackson, Producer's Edge.